Okay, let's open our Bibles tonight to the 7th chapter of John. I was kind of looking to see if we could get through the 7th chapter totally tonight, but we're not. And the only reason is chapter 8 is one of my favorite chapters in the entire Bible. And that's with the woman caught in adultery. So I certainly look forward to getting to that, but we're not going to get through chapter 7. We'll finish it up next week. The previous chapters, Jesus had created several miracles. He had healed people, been at a wedding, fed 5,000, walked on the water. Now tonight we're going to look at him in chapter 7, where he's making a decision to go to the Feast of Tabernacles. Kind of an interesting dialogue between him and his brothers. They actually were his stepbrothers, but kind of an interesting dialogue. So let's begin with verse 1, chapter 7. After this, Jesus went around in Galilee, purposely staying away from Judea because the Jews were there waiting to take his life. So here he is in Galilee, not going back to Jerusalem, because, as it states, the Jews are looking to take his life. Why were the Jews looking to take his life?
Well, because he had told them he was the Messiah.
Partial. What was the main thing he had done?
He revealed their hypocrisy.
Partial. What was the big incident in Jerusalem that created the uproar? Nope, hadn't done that yet.
He didn't do it. He usurped the powers of the ruling Jewish priest, Sadducees, and the Pharisees.
Partially correct. What was it?
He does things on Sabbath that got them.
He healed a paralyzed man of 38 years on the Sabbath. And that was the main contention that they had, because he was a Sabbath breaker. And in the Old Testament, in the wilderness, what did you do with Sabbath breakers?
Stoned them.
So what was the natural conclusion? If there was somebody that you didn't like and they broke the Sabbath, what natural conclusion would you want to come to? They deserve to die. Isn't that ironic? Yes, they were unhappy because he was usurping some power. Yes, they were unhappy because of some of the things that he was teaching. But the main thing in Jerusalem itself was, and we're going to see if we get that far, if next week we'll see exactly, because he calls his attention. He says to them a little bit later in this chapter, "Why are y'all mad at me because I healed a man on the Sabbath?" So he brought that point right out to him. So here he stays in Galilee, purposely not going back to Jerusalem, because he just was not ready to create conflict. But when the Jewish Feast of Tabernacles was near, Jesus' brothers came to him and said, "You ought to leave here and go to Judea so that your disciples can see the miracles that you perform." Now, in itself, that doesn't sound like a bad statement. But John adds on a sentence in a couple of sentences from now that really just belies the whole thing. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Feast of Tabernacles. The Feast of Tabernacles was in the fall, usually around October, November. And it was required, if you lived within 15 miles of Jerusalem, it was required for every male that he be there. But this was such a kind of a fun festival that if you were anywhere near Jerusalem, it was common that especially the male, but the families themselves would come to this festival. Does anybody know what the Feast of Tabernacles celebrated?
I have it in my Bible.
Well, let's read it.
The
good. Appreciate that. As Leroy and I were talking, it's always nice that somebody goes along with what you think's correct. So that's correct. The Feast of Tabernacles was a very special feast. It had several meanings. Number one, it was a celebration of the harvest. And so when this feast came about, they would bring different types of grain, fruits, and things to the temple, and they would give thanks to God for honoring and taking care of their crops. It had a much deeper meaning because it was celebrated and reminded the Jews of the time of the deliverance from Egypt and the time that they spent in the wilderness. Because they lived in tents for 40 years, they literally would make booze out of holly or tree branches, and or they would pitch tents. And so all around the temple, you would see many hundreds, if not thousands, of these little booths and little tents that the people would stay in. The feast itself was 7 days, and then they added an eighth day after the exile in order to commemorate the time that they came back out of captivity. So in Jesus' time, it was an eight-day festival. The people would live in the little booths. They would stay in the little booths. And so during the Feast of Tabernacles, people would visit each other's booth and see kind of what they had come up with. There, the highlight of it was one night they would create artificial light around the temple. And people would create artificial light wherever they were, and they would literally try to light up the sky in commemoration in the desert, how, remember, at nighttime the fire would come. And then the highlight would be the next morning as it dawned, the priest would come out, they would blow trumpets. They had some special water that they would kind of present at the temple, and then they would take it and dump it in the Dead Sea. And this water represented the waters that came from the rock. So it was a very beautiful festivity to remind the people that God had given them the harvest, but most of all, how God had protected them in the wilderness and stayed over them. So this was the highlight. Passover was always number one, but this was the second biggest festival. It was required that if you lived within 15 miles, if you were a good Jew, you had to be there. How do you feel about that? Yeah, how many? Anybody ever go to Adventist schools? Was it required that you went to worship?
Sure was. They took a record.
Yes. How do you feel about that? So, is it good that you require? It was good that all the Jews were required to come to this feast?
Well, that doesn't go along with the way God treats us. It's not a free will. You know, it's not a free will thing. I guess they think if you're going to go, it'll catch or something. And, I don't.
But often says a sullen submission to the will of authority creates the character of the rebel.
Absolutely. So I don't know if I was running a college or a academy. I guess I would probably maybe fall into that making you come to worship. But all I can say is that certainly made me rebel.
Well, at Loma Linda University, you had to go to, you know, the medical students have to go to the chapel. Once a week, they've got that chapel thing.
Yeah. So, but that.
Jews still do this. They put tents,
oh, yes.
They put tents out in their backyard and live in tents.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they. If you're a good Jew, you still do these things. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
And
why? Because to. Yeah.
Or pass my son camp out. You know.
That's right.
Oh, yes.
Well, I think Arlington was one of the. This was when Leroy and John Perryman were kind of running the church. Well, that's not a nice way of looking at it, but they were running the church over on there. Remember when y'all would not close down because of camp meeting? Leroy and John says our church doors never close. So I think that camp meetings should keep them open, except for Arkansas, Louisiana camp meeting. this next May the 30th, I think they ought to close every church.
The conference sent out letters requiring you to close the church and go to camp meetings.
Yes.
So. And that's a bad thing.
Maybe they got it from this text here. So the Feast of Tabernacles was a biggie. And it certainly could have been a very beautiful service. But like all services, sometimes you just simply get caught up in the pageantry and miss the whole concept of why the service is there. So here comes Jesus' brothers. And they come, and as they're probably getting ready to go to the Feast of Tabernacles and they're getting things ready, they notice Jesus not doing a thing. So they come to him, and somebody read verse 3.
You should leave this district and go into Judea, so that your disciples there may see the great things that you're doing. Surely no one can hope to be in the public eye if he works in seclusion.
Keep going.
If you really are doing such things as these, show yourself to the world.
One more.
Brothers had no faith in him.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good maybe at first, doesn't it? The brothers come to him and they say, look, brother, now you ought to leave here and go to Judea so that your disciples in Jerusalem, remember he had some followers, your disciples in Jerusalem can see all the miracles you do. Because no one wants to become a public figure acts in secret. Since you're doing these things here, why don't you go there and show yourself to the world? And then John adds, for even his own brothers did not believe in him. What was wrong with their thinking?
Well, it sounds like they wanted publicity. They wanted him to be well-known. For some reason...
Well, that was my next question. How would that affect them?
I just think they were embarrassed about it. You know, they didn't believe in him doing this, and he was claiming to be something that they didn't think he was.
It's a little embarrassing. You think they were setting him up?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't believe at all. Now, that's kind of amazing because look at the things he's been doing in the book of John. But they still didn't believe. So they said, if you want publicity, why are you doing these things in secret? Here's the perfect stage for you to go down to Jerusalem. Show your disciples who you are, what you can do. And I imagine in their own mind, they thought one of two things will happen. Either he'll be very good and we're his brothers, or he'll be revealed as a fraud. And I don't think they cared one way or the other. I think they thought they were in kind of a no-lose situation. Remember one, anybody know who Charlie Pride is? Okay. Remember we went to Johnny High one time and this guy comes out to sing and guess how they introduced him? You know, they introduced him Max Pride, you know, and everybody. And they said, he's Charlie Pride's brother. Oh! You see, that little add-on made all the difference in the world. He's Charlie Pride's brother. So I think this is exactly what Jesus' brothers were doing. Either he'll become a fraud, because they had to be jealous of him, or if he happens to hit the big time, then we can go along for the ride. They certainly were not thinking at all of Jesus. Now let's talk a little bit about Jesus' strategy here as a part-time evangelist, part-time healer, part-time preacher. Why didn't he go and make himself more public? Look what we've looked at in John so far. Remember, John picked the stories. Fed 15,000 people. Well, that's pretty public. walked on the water, only his disciples really saw him. Went to a little wedding feast, whole lot of people, but not a whole lot. Went to Samaria and talked to a whole town of dogs because the Jews didn't like them. And he healed the man on the Sabbath, of which they about ran him out of town. Why didn't he go more public?
I think he was concerned it would cut his ministry short.
Okay. What other thinking?
Well, is he an example? What he does is for us, that maybe there's some places we shouldn't go. Things could be too dangerous at that time.
Okay.
Sometimes times aren't right.
Okay. What else thinking?
Am I not made a difference?
Pardon me?
Am I not made a difference if you want to go to places like the Old Testament? There's God always saying, like, converse and wicked people always ask for miracles and stuff. And when you do that, they still want to believe.
Okay. Very good. Any other thoughts?
But didn't we just read that he was unwilling to go there because they wanted to kill him?
That's one big reason.
I think it'd be better to be like nowadays. You see these guys, oh, he's a good preacher, and then commercialize them. Next thing you know, it's too big. It's just too much.
Okay.
Well, there are too many hands involved.
Okay.
What can I get out of it? I'm going to give everything more than commercialize you. What can I get out of it?
Because his goals were different. He was there to show God's character. His brothers were seen there to push him to be some big celebrity, maybe.
But with his compassion, it showed throughout. He would do things to tell people that he would heal. Don't tell anybody. Of course, they would. But he felt like that would rush the end. He had his work to do, and he wanted to play out.
Okay. Now here's a question. Didn't intend to ask it tonight, so I'm going to. But I want to ask it. If Jesus was here today, how many hours a day or how many hours a week do you think he would be on TV?
I think 2020 would be fine.
Well, if we recognized it, it would be nonstop. But if it was like it was back here where it wasn't recognized, it would be ignored.
You think he'd have an hour a day program on TV?
No. Nobody would sponsor
him. If he did those miracles today, they have all these kooks on television. Wouldn't they like that? Have somebody with miracles and healing and raising the dead?
If he wanted to get the gospel out, then how do you think he would do it today? Write articles in the newspaper? Send out his own publication?
I think it had been exposed a lot more. Mass media was back then. But I don't think he would go after it.
Okay. We're not talking about... Yeah, very good point. We're not talking about the exposure he would get, because he got exposure back then. How would he do... What would be his strategy?
You can't really get a true sense of someone on TV nowadays, and so I don't see how he could, you know, show the world who he was without being there in person and living by an example and showing others what he's really like on TV. It's, unless the real world or whatever the reality shows that are on all the time, but I mean, you know, does that make sense?
Yes.
I don't see without a sermon
the same way.
Pardon?
He might do it the same way, where you start with just a few and
walk around
and grow.
But if you think about it, the world, is much smaller.
Understand. Understand.
Yeah, we're not even keeping up with the population growth.
Where do you think he would be in Arlington?
Homeless shelter.
Working with the street people.
Absolutely.
Going to the hospital.
What was he accused of?
Some shame was
about everything.
Yeah. Who did he associate with? Tax collectors.
Prostitutes.
Sick people. Samaritans who the Jews wouldn't even talk to. Why would he be any different? Remember Paul talked about, man, I put all these fancy sermons together. I waxed elegantly. I debated fantastic with all of these people. I stood up with some of the best sermons. Did nothing, and then I realized I only had one thing to preach, and that is Christ and Christ crucified. Now, why would Jesus be any different? So here's his brothers saying, man, this is the opportunity. The stage is set. Let's get down there to this feast and you put on the show. Because after all, you can't keep your ministry a secret. Somebody read verse 6.
Therefore Jesus told them, the right time for me has not yet come. For you, any time is right.
Now what does he mean by that? My time hasn't come, but your time is any time. Why was their time right for any time?
Their time for what?
For anything. Okay. What did the brothers stand for? Pardon?
The rest of the world.
Really stood for nothing.
Yeah.
They were not committed to anything. So their time was always, what did they have to lose? They could come and go. Jesus says, my time has not come. Now, have you ever heard him say this in the New Testament? Several times he said this time. This time is different Greek word than the other times. The other times when he says, my hour has not yet come, the time for me to glorify has not yet come, those in Greek phraseology meant that this was a ordained plan from him and God that was set in motion. It was not yet time. Thus the crucifixion. It was not yet time for him to die. Why? Because he had not accomplished what he wanted to accomplish. This phrase is the only time that it's used in the Greek when he said to his brothers, my time is not yet come. And that simply means, this is not the right opportunity. He's just saying, this isn't a good opportunity for me to go down today. Now, did he go down?
Yeah.
So that's why it wasn't set in stone. So he's not saying in the great plan, it is not my hour or my time has not come that I should go to the Feast of Tabernacles. He's just simply saying in a discourse, this is not a good opportunity for me to go today. So his brothers, they're a little disappointed. After all, he doesn't get down there. So he says to them, the right time for me has not yet come, or the opportunity for me, but you, the time is right. Somebody read verse 7.
For the world can't hate you, but it does hate me, because I accuse it of sin and evil.
Now what does he mean by that? The world doesn't hate you. Someone interpret that or put it into modern day English. World doesn't hate you, but it hates me.
Well, he knew the Jewish authorities hated him.
Okay.
The devil was out after
him. It's two of them. Why didn't the world hate the brothers?
They're part of it. They were nowhere
coming. Pardon?
They didn't have a message.
What did you say, John?
They're part of it.
Yeah, they're part of the world.
Yeah.
Thieves don't hate thieves. Robbers don't hate robbers. I mean, they're part of it. The brothers are part of the world. They had no spiritual insight. Later on in the New Testament, we'll see how they handled their own mother at one time. They had no spiritual eye salve, no spiritual insight. So Jesus says, do whatever you want to. The world doesn't hate you. It hates me, Jesus speaking, because I expose evil. Now this, in my estimation, is a very key point. How did Jesus expose evil?
I guess by his life, or the way he did it. Because he really didn't condemn people, other than the higher